This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And our topic this week is, well, can you guess the topic this week, Wolf?
Should I be able to?
Have you been keeping up on your blog reading?
I believe so.
Okay, well, that might mean that you don't actually follow my blog. In any case, the topic this week
follow your blog, but
is
yes, go on.
Andrew's blog role in the post-blog era.
Oh man, that sounds exactly the topic I need. I don't know. I thought I was. You know what? I think I just haven't scrolled down all the way to your blog. So sorry about that.
It happens. Well, so the recent post that I made is called "Rolling Back," and it's from last night, something like that. And it's actually in any case, actually, before we get into that, do you have a little bit of follow up?
Yeah, this is a quick correction. In the last episode, I referred to the author of Writing Solid Code as Steve McConnell. And Steve McConnell wrote a very good book called Code Complete, but that is a totally different book from the guy who wrote Writing Solid Code, which is Steve McGuire. So, McGuire. I think I put a Mac in there. Sorry. Yes, so McGuire.
Yeah, yeah, I would have said something, but I just didn't get to
it. Yeah. Yeah, you throw me softballs. I know. Yeah.
The only thing I would say about last week's show is that it got the most feedback on Twitter, I believe, that we've gotten from any show, and it was primarily people saying, "Oh my God, this is making me hungry," which totally understandable, considering that was my first reaction as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Okay, so to get back to it, I had a blog post again called "Rolling Back." That referred to a blog post from back in 2010 called On a Roll. And yes, I have plenty of those variations on the word roll that I would
use. You're not going to roll out anytime soon? We haven't reached peak roll yet?
No. Roll out is a good one. Forward roll might be another one. Plenty.
Don't bring them up here, man.
Well, that's true. I don't actually... Was I going to use that one? Anyway... the original post from 2010 was a list of 24 blogs, which I refer to as my blog roll. What's funny is that the blog roll on the side of my blog, the Powers of Observation Subjective Observer .wordpress.com currently, only has four of them. So I'm not quite sure what I was thinking. I might update that before we go live, or I might not. Who knows? And I guess I had 24 blog posts, and it was a curated list in that I wasn't just listing things. I also divided them up into five categories, and I said why I liked each of them, that sort of thing. And so I liked that because, it provided a little bit more context for the blogs that I follow. Also, it's funny, I put in it, what did I say here? Ah, yes, that I talked about my NetNewsWire feeds, which is also a bit of a historical thing there. NetNewsWire does exist again, but... I'm actually using something else, which we'll get to. And so, yes, 24 blogs. And I talked a little bit about each one. And then what I meant to do was to keep updating it and to say, well, here's where I add new things to the blog row. Here's maybe where I remove some things from the blog row. And, of course, I didn't do any of that. That I wrote it in 2010, and I haven't touched it at all. I haven't even gone back to it at all. Until yesterday, although I've been thinking about it. And so the post rolling back is about what happened with those old blogs, what things got changed with them. And I actually think the original plan, which was to keep updating the original single post, is probably not what I want to do now anyway, because I think what it needs is kind of ongoing update posts, which say, okay, here's the state of things right now, here's the state of things 6 months from now, etc., because you can't just change things in one place and expect that to be understandable to everyone. Well, where did this one thing go? Well, you won't know because it's gone from your current one. So in any case, I'm going to talk a little bit about that post of what happened to the old blogs. I'm going to talk a little bit about what new blogs I'm planning to add to the blog role, the theoretical blog role. And I'm going to talk about, what I mean when I say post-blog era, a little bit more about that as well. So let's start with the old blogs. There are a couple of interesting points about the old blogs. About 5 out of the total 24, so a little over 20%, are dead. And I don't just mean that they don't post anymore, actually gone, or either completely gone in that, you know, you go to that URL and it doesn't respond anymore, or you go to that URL and the author of the blog, him or herself, says, nope, this is dead. So it's not just infrequent posts. And there are a couple of things I want to mention about that. The first one I mentioned is from Chris Ashworth.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that name?
I don't think so.
You've probably heard of him, but it's a little indirectly. Now, he originally had a great blog post from 2010 about app pricing, which is now only available from the Wayback Machine, so I'll put that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But he is the founder of a company called Figure 53.
Is that the paper guys?
No.
Okay.
Because, in fact, yes. So he wrote a blog post on his company blog, since his personal blog was already dead by that point, because Figure 53 is a company that is basically him and a couple other people. 53 is also the name of a company which is bigger. It's got apparently a couple million in venture funding, that sort of thing, but still relatively small, because then you compare that against Facebook. And what the 53 company did was they made an application called Paper, mm-hmm. which you might remember. Did you get it?
Well, I didn't get it. No.
It was free, actually. So, and it had in-app purchase for like a couple of the tools. So I got the free version and I played around with it a little bit. And then Facebook, all these names, Facebook said, well, we're coming out with our own app called Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so what 53 said was, oh my God, they're stealing our name to do their thing. And, you know, it's too bad because they're Goliath and we're David. So then Chris Ashworth said, well, you guys think you're David, but you're kind of Goliath to our David, because when I tried to contact you about the fact that your company has a very, very similar sounding name to ours, but is newer,
mm-hmm.
you didn't really respond to me. You didn't really want to deal with me, because I was just this little guy, little fly buzzing aside.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put a link to in the show notes to that post as well. It seems to have worked out in the end after he kind of made a public thing about it, but it was kind of interesting. And the post was actually called David and Goliath. So you might have heard about, I guess you didn't hear about that, but in any case, I remember reading that post back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so his personal blog is dead. So that, again, that one post about app pricing is gone. But he's got this new blog, relatively new blog, called Notes from Figure 53, which is the company blog, which is both him and his employees. And so it's kind of interesting. So I've subscribed to that. Mm-hmm. And so there is a successor blog to the old blog. The next one that was interesting to mention is ranchero.com.
Right.
And so you've probably heard of that. That's the link blog from the prolific Brent Simmons, who I've mentioned before. And it is replaced by his regular blog, inessential.com. And the other one I wanted to mention was iPhone and iPad UX reviews by Suzanne Ginsberg,
mm-hmm.
which has been replaced by another blog called Touchy Talk. And I subscribed to the UX reviews because that really had a little bit more to do with, you know, actually analyzing the user experience of applications. I think Touchy Talk doesn't quite have as much to do with that. It's more of a regular review site. Okay. So I haven't subscribed to the new one there. But
I have to argue that maybe the latter name is actually more clever.
Yes.
Touchy Vili. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Sure. So then the next category, or the next group of blogs that I want to talk about, is the ones that I would consider to be quote-unquote slumbering. And slumbering is a judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
A blog that only ever posted, say, twice a month. Actually, they posted twice a month, excuse me, and then went fallow for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would consider that to be slumbering because they broke the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a blog, I'm going to just saying all these things wrong here. A blog that posted every 3 months, and then it went 3 months fallow. Well, you can't tell if it's actually
mm-hmm.
changed. Maybe it's still around.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But in any case, I categorize another 5 blogs as slumbering. And so some of them haven't been updated since 2010. I would consider that to be really, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, that would be something that has gone on a hiatus. The one that was particularly, it was too bad about, was Cocoa with Love by Matt Gallagher, which mm-hmm. he stopped posting there in 2011. So that's like almost 3 years ago now, about 3 years ago now. And he's actually on Twitter as Cocoa with Love as well. And he was continuing to tweet on Twitter up until 2013. So mm-hmm. the Twitter account outlasted the blog, but both now appear to be have gone a little silent now. So that's unfortunate. The third sort of group of blogs that I want to talk about, the way that they've changed, is the transformed blogs. Blogs that, okay, so they're still around, and they're still posting to them, but they're not quite what they were when I mentioned them back in 2010. And the first one is Jeff LaMarche's blog. LaMarche?
Mm-hmm. LaMarche, I think.
LaMarche? Oh, really? Okay.
I think so, but I'm probably wrong.
His blog was called iPhone Development. And since July of 2013, it's been exclusively about how he's developing his company's game, Turncoat. So it's not, I wouldn't consider it to be much of a general purpose iPhone development blog anymore. It's a game development blog, mm-hmm. both about the technology of the games and the how it's been for his company to be trying to develop a game as a small company. So, I mean, it's interesting, but it's not quite the same as what it used to be. The second one I wanted to mention is Matt Gemmell's blog. Mm-hmm. Because since January of this year, he has switched from being a developer to being a writer. Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose you could consider a developer to be someone who writes code, but yes, mm-hmm. he's writing fiction and nonfiction. I believe he's writing a book. You heard about this, right, Wolf?
I guess I have.
So we had a post in January where he sort of went through his thinking process about switching over.
And I remember hearing that he stopped, but I forgot the reason why.
Well, and it sounded very interesting. Like he was mm-hmm. going into a new thing. It was kind of risky. And so he was excited, but he was also a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm still subscribed to his stuff, but it's not a developer blog anymore. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't entirely a developer blog before, but it was still a developer talking about things. And now it's kind of a writer talking about things. So the next one I wanted to mention was the Daniel Jalkut's blog. So he has a company called Red Sweater, and his Red Sweater blog used to be kind of both for company announcements and personal announcements. Mm-hmm. So you subscribe to it in order to hear about what he had to say about programming and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But he has since switched it to just be a company blog because his personal topics are now at bitsplitting.org, which was also briefly a podcast. Mm-hmm. And is no longer a podcast. But mm-hmm. but yeah, so again, it's kind of a, if you want to just have his thoughts about technology, you go to this other place.
Yeah, I know that I think he talked about the split on a Core Intuition episode. Yeah. And, I think it was overall, I say it's a good move. Like, he has a lot to say. And kind of, on one hand, it's like, it's one thing where I want to subscribe to a person and want to, it's kind of like going to one feed and whatever they have to say, yes, put it on there that I can keep up with you. But on the other hand, he's right that he's probably putting a bunch of stuff there that maybe the customers or Red Sweater software mm-hmm. don't actually care about. So I'm on board with that.
Sure. Yes, I know I've talked with certain people who aren't fans of this, but I'm certainly a fan of compartmentalization. You want certain things, you want everything in its right place. So, mm-hmm. And it's true. Like he's talked in the past about the fact that, his, he is active on Twitter as Daniel Punkass.
Yeah.
Right. And he's talked about how, well, maybe that's not the best thing to be on Twitter as the representative of your company. But, he's finally decided, well, no, it's what the heck. It's what I do. So there are a couple of blogs that are pretty much remain unchanged. Mike Ash is still going strong, as what he's doing. Brent Simmons' regular blog, inessential.com, is still completely going strong. He's posting mm-hmm. more than ever. And I have to mention it. Wolf, you're a wrench.tumblr.com. And for those of you out there who've been missing me, spell your name. Wrench, R-E-N-T, plus Z, plus S-C-H, .tumblr.com. I'm not going to spell Tumblr. And you actually just posted recently there. So, definitely not dead. So that's pretty much, let's see, that's pretty much the existing blog. That's pretty much what happened to them. It was interesting to see that that there was quite a bit of turnover, quite a bit of change with that list, even from just 3 years ago.
Well, one thing is that I know that Brent kind of went through, like, it's interesting because, with that Newswire, he kind of, you could tell that he kind of thought that maybe just, reading RSS feeds in general wasn't healthy. And I almost got a feeling like he hated his own product there for a while. Like, he used it, but it's like he would just, he would recommend to people that you don't have to launch it, that, you know, this mark everything as unread, as read, right? And he, like, aggressively typed.
Really?
It.
I don't remember him saying
this. Yeah, this was, I'm pretty sure he blogged about this, or I think this was even before Twitter. So it was like, I think he kind of maybe got the impression that it was like maybe just too distracting, or maybe trying to keep up with everything was actually harmful to actually producing something good. And then I got the distinct impression that he stopped updating his blog for a long time. And he also stopped updating Twitter for a while. Like, those phases were separate, but he also got pissed off at Twitter for a while there. But now he's on Twitter again. I noticed he cut down his follower count drastically.
Oh yeah.
So that, yeah, I think it's in the hundreds before. I think it was higher than that before, but I think he's come back to terms with how to use these tools we have productively. And so whatever makes him healthy and happy, I'm all for.
Sure. And he's mentioned it at, I don't remember exactly where, that while some people go to ground when they're busy, he seems to post more when he's busy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you see him thinking about things out loud, it's because he's got stuff to do. If you don't see him thinking about things out loud, it's because he's not necessarily doing them. I don't know if that's always been the pattern with him, but it certainly seems to be now.
Yeah, and the other thing is that so my Tumblr blog, that was basically me just like I had switched servers, and I used to run my own custom blog software called Weblog, because it was based on web objects. And I had switched servers, and I was like faced with getting a web objects deployment up and running again, and I just kept on putting it off, and for months I put it off, and I realized that this actually was. Basically one night I decide this has gone ridiculous. I have a bunch of stuff that I want to push out. And so I'm like, what's the cheapest possible thing I can do? And I mean, cheapest in dust in terms of attention. It's like to get it out there. And at the time,
least friction.
Yeah, exactly. And Jailcut had shipped Tumblr support in Mars Edit,
right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is such a easy slam dunk that I'll just do it, which is odd, because like I know that Daniel actually is not a fan of Tumblr. It's ever shifting API and how it doesn't they don't keep him in a loop when things change, and how he just always, I think he's even threatened on Core Intuition to like drop Tumblr support from here and there.
I think yes, that sounds familiar.
And so I feel badly that I'm using his least preferred blogging service there, but it was just, and you know, with our edge cases show here, I always thought that this was always a temporary thing. That's why I'm surprised mine comes up on your list, because you said it was like from 2012 or something, your previous updates or your previous
2010.
2010. I'm surprised I've been on Tumblr for 4 years. I feel that way. It always feels like a temporary hack. Yes. With edge cases now, we're using Jekyll and I just didn't want to spend that night learning Jekyll, so that's why I used Tumblr. But I now know Jekyll pretty much in and out, and because we're using it for our edgecasesshow.com site. So I would totally be fine with just moving all my blog points there. But again, it's like I don't even want to spend a single night thinking about a blog, and this will come back and bite me eventually. But yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, we still need to implement multiple pages for the thing.
Oh yeah, we are. Although I have to say that it's really handy having this everything.
Yeah, no, you're right. Site, it is
because it's very
nice.
Easy for me. Because you'd be, well, maybe you wouldn't be surprised how many times I think I'm going to cover a topic and I've already covered it.
Well, I mean, I was using it for this episode because I was researching which blogs I had already mentioned, which posts, because there are many blogs where I would say, oh, it's interesting to me because of this post.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to some of that.
Okay.
Where was it? Oh, and then one thing I forgot to mention the category of blogs called the commentary blogs, which of all of the categories seem to have survived the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually interesting, you know, you talk about, well, maybe you didn't actually mention it directly, but I consider the Wrench blog to be relatively infrequently updated.
Right.
And most of the commentary blogs are updated pretty frequently. Daring Fireball goes, you know, probably maybe at most a week before posting something. But the one commentary blog which seems to be more on the technical blog posting schedule is Apple Outsider. where he just doesn't post very much, but he still posts enough to make it worthwhile to keep him around. But I thought that was interesting. And then the other one that I thought was interesting from the commentary blogs was Waffle by quote unquote Jesper. I don't know if that's his real name. He won't tell us his last name, but he went on about a 2-year hiatus and then he has come back recently, come back strong again, posting a lot. So I thought that was interesting. You know, that's a good reason not to just delete things from your feed, from your RSS reader when they stop posting right away, or even for a couple of years, because they might come back and you won't know otherwise.
Yeah.
Speaking of RSS, I think there was a lot of talk when Google Reader killed off its, when Google killed off Google Reader, the aggregate RSS service that they had, that, well, maybe RSS was dead. Or at the very least that RSS was quote unquote tired, right? it was not interesting anymore because nothing was going on with it. Nobody was making millions of dollars off of it, but it is still around and it is still worthwhile, I think. So I am using, since obviously the Google Reader shut down, I'm using another service. I'm using FeedWrangler now, which is a paid service. A bunch of them kind of started off before Google Readers had shut down for good so that you could migrate everything off of it. And it's interesting because, you know, back in 2010, when I talked about NetNewsWire feeds, NetNewsWire, I believe, actually, no, that's not true. Originally, NetNewsWire would go and look at all the RSS web pages directly, or RSS pages directly, because you can do that, right? RSS is just a particular location on your website that you can go to and get this information. But it seems like what happened 2010 or earlier was that people started thinking, well, no, you need an aggregate service for it. You can't just go hit all these websites yourself, even though that's totally possible. And I think some of that might have been because of mobile. Because before, from your computer, you could go out and hit 100 websites, and it wasn't necessarily that big of a deal. But for mobile, now you've got constraints. You pay more, and things are slower. And so maybe people said, well, no, just to make it worthwhile, just to make it workable, we need to use these services. And also the all of the readers that exist now pretty much seem to require you, they won't let you go out to individual RSS sites. They require you to go through an aggregate service. It seems to me, that's what I'm doing anyway. I'm using Reader. Now it's difficult to discuss on a podcast because there's Reader and then there's Reader. Right, the Reader with two E's, actually Reader with three E's, R-E-E-D-E-R, which I paid for. It's actually a nice, I find it to be a nice little app. So let's see, was there anything else I wanted to do? Yes, yeah, so the nice thing about Reader on iPhone and iPad is that it had rotation support, had landscape and portrait support on the iPhone. And I like that because, you know, I'm on this little tiny little screen. I'm trying to read things. It's often nice, even just with text, to be able to turn it into landscape to get the text to be a little bigger without needing to do anything else for it. And also, I did tweet about this a little bit. I don't remember exactly when, maybe a couple months ago, that it's also good for webcomic RSS feeds because then you can look at the comic image a little bigger without needing to go through a lot of extra steps. So this was Reader 1.0. Reader 2.0, which has sort of iOS 7 visuals, is great in that, and great that it looks better, but it only lets you see landscape for pictures. Like if you actually tap on the picture and then look at the picture by itself, then you can see that in landscape. And I can understand why they do that. They didn't want to put a lot of extra effort into that because, you know, any feature you support is going to be something you can't do anything else on. But it's still, you know, I'm going to stick with 1.0 basically until it doesn't work anymore because of that reason. But, you know, we're not necessarily talking about webcomics here. The interesting thing for me about my habits with Reader now is that since I'm pretty much only read on the phone, I don't even read on the iPad because I'm reading on the go for the most part, which means that longer posts, I generally can't give the attention that they're due. I can't give the brain cells that they're due. And so one thing that I actually just started to do again recently, I paid for Instapaper however long ago, and then I had kind of gotten out of the habit of using it because I would find that I would put things on Instapaper and then just never read them.
Yeah, read it never, right?
A write-only reader. Right? But I'm gonna try to actually basically turn it into a sync service, right? So I mark things as to go to Instapaper on the phone, and then I'll actually, those will be the things that I go back to the computer to read later. So it's kind of interesting to be using it like that. So that's that. And there are other services too. Wolf, have you paid for a new service, or are you just not?
I have, but I don't know if you want me to talk about it now or if you want me to do it at the end.
Yeah, why don't we do it at the end? But there's a couple other ones. I didn't choose FeedWrangler for any particular huge reason. It was just available for Reader and up and running by the time I needed something new. It has seemed to work for me pretty well. But other than that, I don't have anything. So, you know, I probably keep going with it because it's not causing me any hassle. But I wouldn't say, oh my God, everybody has to do this. So let's see. The next thing to talk about is the new blogs. So I talked about what happened with the older blogs. And for more details about the older blogs, you can go to this rolling back post, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So let's talk about newer ones. There's a couple blogs that have either started after I had my other post, or just I didn't discover at the time. So one of them is Florian Kugler, and it's just FlorianKugler.com, and it'll be in the show notes. And the reason he caught my eye was because of his post about concurrent core data stacks performance shootout. And I thought we had mentioned this on the blog, but I guess I don't have a link to it in the show notes. So I don't know when we talked about it or how that one happened, but I guess I'll put a link there now. And he's, you know, he does other posts as well, interesting things. And he's also one of the founders of Objc.io, which we will talk about in a bit. Let's see, a couple others. iOS Unit Testing by Ron Lyle. Have you heard about this, Wolf?
No, I haven't. This sounds interesting.
It's called iOSUnitTesting.com. No spaces, no dashes. And he's a pretty hardcore test-driven development guy attempting to apply that to Xcode. And so, as you might imagine, he gets frustrated sometimes about that. But he is, you know, he's trying to make all that work. So his posts are an interesting exercise in someone trying to make all that happen and exploring different ways to make that happen. So I'm not necessarily a hardliner for test-driven development. I don't do it myself. I haven't done it. But I do like unit tests. We've talked about it. I did a whole podcast episode about it. So it's interesting to sort of keep up with what he's up to. Another one I wanted to mention was The Mental Blog by Drew McCormick. And he is he's pretty mental. He's the founder of The Mental Faculty and developer of Mental Case. And his thing, which I have mentioned on the podcast, is ICA Cloud, which is some logic, I believe just one class, but a bunch of methods to simplify using the iCloud service. And he posted that in January of 2014. So I'll put his blog in the show notes as well.
I've met Drew in person, and he chews with his mouth closed. He's not nearly as mental as he makes himself out to be.
Okay. Well, you know, he's the one who talked about being a mental case, so, you know, I'll take your word for it. Another one who's actually relatively new, I think he might have started the blog after I did my post, but he's not a newcomer, is Gus Mueller.
Oh, sure.
Author of Acorn, proprietor of the Flying Meat company, which I was like, Flying Meat, really? That's your name? Okay, but his blog, I actually looked it up. His blog appears to have started back in 2010. So he only started blogging relatively recently. It's called The Shape of Everything. Actually, no, The Shape of Everything is new, but then he did another blog before that. But then this is the new version of it. And he's recently been giving these monthly sort of progress reports on what he's working on. So that's been very interesting to me. It's not necessarily a whole lot of, there's some technical stuff in there as well. But some of it's just interesting because it's, oh, hey, here's how a person makes a software company work.
Yeah, the entire monthly idea where you kind of almost commit to a schedule there that, you know, like once a month I'll do a bullet point list of what's changed. That's an interesting tact, like as you say about blogs going kind of dormant for 3 months at a time. And, you know, that's the beauty of RSS. You know, only post when you have something interesting to say. Mm-hmm. But I do like that's actually one of the nice things about this very podcast is the weekly schedule. And it forces me to ship, you know. And some episodes are stronger than others, but every 2 weeks I put something out.
yes, indeed. And so I actually have some other things I want to talk about in depth, so I'm going to go a little faster. There's Ole Begman, I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's a blog called iOS Development, OLEB.net/blog. And the reason he came to my mind was because of his post about NS Progress that I talked about like last episode or a couple episodes ago. And there's another one called UI Observatory by, and I'm going to butcher this name, Jochen Volter, which has a lot of interesting posts about talking about user interface. Now, so those are relatively newish blogs or blogs that are new to me. There are a couple of people that I think I missed in my first go-round in blog roles. And there's Carpet Aqua by Justin Williams. Uh-huh. And I think I might have missed that because he also kind of went fallow for a while. And then a couple of years ago, he kind of rededicated himself to writing on his blog. And now he blogs a lot more now than he used to. There's Coco Is My Girlfriend by Marcus Zara and a couple others. It's actually interesting. This is one of the only blogs I know of that's been going on for a while that that's an effort by a couple of people. It's a collective. So that's interesting. I subscribe to that. And then the other one that I don't know if it's actually, he's been doing this for a long time, but I think so, is Graham Lee, kind of friend of the show. And so his, the old name
maybe,
for-
Maybe a frenemy.
Frenemy of the show? All right, I can say that. So his, the old name for his blog was Secure Mac Programming. And I believe that that was probably because at one time he did a book called Secure Mac Programming.
Right,
something like that.
I have that book.
And that's where he got his Twitter handle from. It's SecBoffin for Security Boffin. And a boffin is apparently a person engaged in scientific or technical research, or a person with knowledge or skill considered to be complex, arcane, and difficult. So,
way to prepare for the episode, man.
So, I guess I was kind of curious in the back of my mind. Where the heck do you come up with a name like SecBoffin?
But do you read Bastard Operator from Hell?
No.
Okay.
What is that?
Okay. Well, I'll put the link into the show notes.
Okay.
For that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's funny is that, you know, I subscribed to this, and I only subscribed to this relatively recently. And I thought with a name like Secure Mac Programming, well, it would be a blog post about Mac programming, possibly security-based Mac programming. And it isn't really at all. It's kind of the joke about the Holy Roman Empire, you know, not holy, not Roman, not an empire. Not really, you know, not about security, not always about Mac, and, you know, sometimes not even about programming. And it's more really kind of philosophical musings about programming than anything, you know, any sort of policy arguments or anything like that. And so it was always a bit of an odd duck in my mind. And so apparently he thinks so too, because he's decided to rename the blog. And he now calls it Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers. Had you seen this? You probably did, because he posted about it.
Apparently, I'm behind my feeds without knowing about it. So, yes, I missed this.
So he had a post this month called Where Am I Going With This? And it's interesting because the name, like the rest of the blog, it really does mirror the rest of the blog, because it's kind of interesting. It's got interesting contours to it. It's unique. I haven't seen any other blogs called this, and I don't completely understand the thinking behind it. Because Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers, not programming, like, so he's analyzing the programmers themselves? I'm not quite sure I get that. And also the name of it, like, so you would think that you could call it SICP.info, right? But he doesn't call it that. He calls it SICPERS.info, like CISPERS info, or if you want to read it that way, sick person. In any case, I don't quite get it, but it's interesting, and so I'm gonna keep you know, reading, seeing what he's gonna have to say next. But it is kind of, you know, it's a little more out in left field. So if you're interested in that, you should definitely have a look at that yourself. But that's sort of the regular blogs, and I wanted to talk a little bit about what I think of as another kind of blog, another kind of resource that has been coming up over the last couple of years. That is one reason why I think of this as being the post-blog era. Because I do think people do still blog, but I think that it's become less of the lifeblood of the community than it used to be.
Sure.
So I think there are so many other avenues for people to talk to each other that you don't have to blog anymore to talk about your life, to communicate to people. And so I think there are fewer blog posts than there used to be. I think they've become more specialized in the same way that, you know, sort of Macs themselves are more specialized now because most people are using iOS devices. Blogs are more specialized now that there's other ways to communicate. But what has risen up, and I don't think we're really going to have time to talk about in all much detail, is what I I don't have a good name for it, but sort of documentation oriented resources or blogs, like nshipster.com by Matt Thompson, or let's see, what's another one? Obsi.io would be the other big one. Now there's those, and then there's other ones which are kind of more aggregators, like cocosnippets.io and iosdevweekly.com and ios.devtools.me. And so there's a whole bunch of these things, and I guess I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention to them before, and I'm trying to sort of explore more of them now. So the aggregators, again, you know, is the community big enough to need aggregators to bring all this stuff together? Well, apparently, because people are trying to make a business of it now. There's the iOS Dev Weekly is a weekly newsletter which sells advertising, that sort of thing. But the other thing that, again, I wouldn't have thought would be necessary for the Cocoa community is these blogs that are basically their own kind of, they're trying to provide new documentation for Cocoa. They're not just saying, like what I would think, like a regular blog, a blog by an individual person would say things like, well, here's something I discovered, or here's something I believe, and here's why I believe it. A more documentation-based blog says, here's how X works. Or here's everything you need to know about why. And that, it's funny because it just took me a while to sort of understand that, or at least to get used to it, because it's different. It's not something I think that the community has done a lot of before. Now, it's not that it's new. It's not that it's completely new, because what people did before was they wrote books. And they said, well, okay, I want to give you a tutorial on this. I want to give you all this information about this from a sort of an authoritative point of view. Well, I'll write a book, and then you'll go buy it, and then you'll read it, and that'll be what you do off to the side there. But the blogs are for sort of individual things you discover. And now people are kind of taking that and saying, well, no, we're going to put more of that on the web for people to have all the time. So what are the – talk a little bit about upsides and downsides of this. So let's talk about downsides first, because that's kind of what I do. I think this has – I don't know. This feels like it has more of a potential to lead developers astray, because if your blog post says, well, here's what I do, that's one thing. And if you say why, then that's even more so, because someone can say, well, I'm not going to do that because I don't agree with your reasons. But if your article just says do X, and you sound like an Apple technical article in this authoritative and personal voice, and in fact it's wrong, I think it's people are more likely to accept it and to propagate it in that case. Mm. And I think the reason it seems like maybe it's a cultural thing. I'm again really don't have time to go into too much detail, and I want to talk about it more in the future, because we are getting a lot of people from other communities into the Cocoa community now because of the iOS becoming such a big deal. I think the reason why we didn't get so much of this before was because people said, well, Apple's already providing that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've already got this 800-pound gorilla, which is doing all of this work, and so we're not going to get in the way of it. And these other people coming in from other communities say, well, no, we can do that too. Mm-hmm. We can be documenters of things. Mm-hmm. And so, to a degree, it is plugging a gap in that, well, this was going to be an upside, but it's giving more information out there to newbies that they weren't necessarily getting, because Apple isn't going to put out a weekly, you know, blog post about new stuff. They aren't going to give you something you can subscribe to. They're at most going to give out new documentation, which is hard to get to because their website is kind of a mess, you know, and once a year they're going to have WWDC. But if you want, you know, someone to keep teaching you about all this stuff, because there is a lot of stuff to learn if you're new, then, you know, maybe we do need other people to do that for us. But again, it's generally restating things which are in the documentation. So, you know, I think when I blog about stuff like this, I tend to say, well, here's my little extra bit that I'm going to be adding to it. But then if you want the rest, go to the documentation. And this other philosophy says, well, no, we're going to pull you away from the documentation. And that might be bad, you know, because the documentation from Apple gets updated. It's details of things that Apple wants you to know and the way they want you to know it. And if this were sort of the Mac era, I would have said, well, yes, definitely somebody do something better, because the documentation was pretty bad back then. But now it's really pretty good. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then for me, one of the downsides for me personally is this kind of resource is harder to use. Because if, when it's blog posts which say, well, here's what I discovered, here's this odd thing that I discovered, I can read that entire blog post and find something new, learn something new. When it's something which says, well, here's everything you need to know about, you know, NS URL connection. Well, 9 of the 10 points are things that I will already know because I'm already using it. I already know how to use it. I've already used it. And maybe there's only one thing in there which is, oh, hey, I didn't know that. So I've got to wade through a lot more to get something out of these new resources than I used to.
Well, that's a good point.
And so I haven't, that's one reason why I haven't been paying a lot of attention to them. But I think it's important, especially as they become, they seem to be pretty prominent these days. They're not just something that's off to the side. They're becoming things that lots of people refer to. And so I think it's important to keep abreast of them, to see what they have to offer. And again, get more familiar with them. And in some ways, it's interesting because in the same way that maybe these people are newer to the community than I am, maybe in some ways, maybe they're not. Here, I thought I was the guy who knew everything about, you know, the platform, and not everything, but, you know, a lot. And mm-hmm. this is something new to me now mm-hmm. that I have to learn about. So it's interesting to sort of see that kind of turnabout in that way. So, and they don't really, you know, when I went back to go back to what I was saying originally about the post-blog era, a lot of these places, while you can get them in your RSS feed, and I am, they don't necessarily call themselves blogs, right? Mm-hmm. The obsi.io is they call themselves a periodical, I believe. Mm-hmm. And yeah. these other places, things call themselves newsletters. So they don't really think of themselves as blogs in the same way that I tend to think of blogs. But there you go. So I think that's kind of it for me. And I think probably more stuff will come up as we talk. You sounded like you had some stuff to add.
Oh, yeah. I've been chomping at the bit. Apple used to have a periodical. It was Develop Magazine. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay. It was... Caroline Rose.
Was it like the OS the pre OS 10 era?
Pretty much, yeah, totally. Yeah. It was System 7 era type stuff. Like when AOCE came out, the Apple Open Collaboration Environment. That was where you'd learn about it. Open Doc type stuff. OSA, which is still with us today. Right. This is where you'd learn about all the new stuff, and it was I think it came out quarterly, if I remember correctly, and it was essentially kind of synced with maybe new technologies, if I remember correctly. And it was I think to this day the best development focused magazine I've ever read, and so I was heartbroken when Apple killed it, but also Apple was hemorrhaging money, and the rumors at MacHack was that it would cost $1 million an issue to produce. So that's a lot of money. But it was really great. So I think there's a place for there's a hole for these to be filled by these types of sites that yep. kind of mm-hmm. Come out on a regular basis. And I wouldn't say it's fair to call obsi.io just a documentation site, because they've delved into other things like how to implement TCP, for example. I think I tweeted about that. But mostly, yeah, you're right. These are kind of new to our community, and so we kind of have to figure out how they fit into our workaday lives. And one of the things about this is that, you know, as graybeards as we were, you know, we tend to kind of this might sound really arrogant, but we tend to know everything. But but
we tend to think we know everything.
There we go. I like that a lot. And you know, we have to remember that there's a lot of new blood out there, and that are maybe they are accomplished Windows programmers and they're new to iOS, or maybe that's new to programming in general. And so if these documentation sites feed the newer talent, I'm all for it. But I agree with you. There are no perfect solutions. There are only trade-offs. Yeah, you're right that these are going to be become obsolete faster. I mean, it's not like, well, unfortunately, like one of the problems with Apple's site is that everything tends to move around on a regular basis, and nothing is searchable or linkable very well. And even if these sites are kind of fly-by-night, which is – I don't really – sorry, sites, I don't mean to call you fly-by-night. But
But you will.
The chances are, even if there's this, like, a little two-year project by some dude in his basement, they're probably great. The URLs are going to be more persistent than even Apple's URLs.
Oh, gosh,
Apple
yes.
has a problem. We need to do an intervention here.
Yeah.
But well, it's interesting because like I'm totally on board with this because the topics I would choose for C4, well, that's one of the benefits I got for running C4, is that I could choose who would speak about what type stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I purposely would choose topics that the idea was that if you could hear about this at DubDub, it's not going to be at C4. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
And but then you have conferences that that's their bread and butter. Is to talk about these APIs that you just can get at DubDub. But that said, I will say that there's a definite advantage you're learning about from non-Apple engineers. We've discussed on the show numerous times that Apple tends to give you the glossy version of this new API.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very interested to hear about new APIs from non-Apple speakers, people who've actually used them in the field.
Yeah.
Because they're the guys who actually will tell you where the bodies are buried.
Well, but that's the interesting thing about a lot of these things, and that's where I might be a little wary of them, is that they don't – that's what I think a lot of the older blogs would provide. They would say, well, here's what Apple says, and here's my experience.
Yeah.
A lot of these newer websites, and maybe it's the biggest thing that I've seen is from Anna Sipster like that, is that they seem to mostly just be rephrasing what you would get from documentation as opposed to saying, well, yes, here's what the definition of it is, but here's what I found. They mm-hmm. don't seem to have that second part as much. And yeah.
I agree. But that said, I totally believe Matt Thompson adds value, that because like he has a way with words and summarizing type stuff. And don't get me wrong, the Apple, like, you know, they tend to have two forms of documentation, the API-level documentation and then the kind of, like, the guides type stuff. And the guides are very well written. But there's something different about having this multi-chapter kind of delve into it type guide that covers all the aspects versus Matt's write-up. Matt is a very skilled writer. And he puts everything on a single page. And it's like, there's something, I don't know, it's like, it's like this, those stupid BuzzFeed articles where it's like 15 ways to blah, 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 or 15, right? I don't mean to associate Matt with BuzzFeed
at all. BuzzFeed. Sorry, Matt.
But it's yeah, one of these summarizes. Things where it's like, yeah. You know, yeah, it's like you have this one page on your screen and it's not that long. And if you start at the top and you read all the way to the bottom, you have the gist. And it's not a big time commitment and all the parts are juicy. So why don't you just do it? And I think that's highly valuable. Especially for like a new API that you maybe are just kind of skipping and you don't want to set aside 60 minutes to watch a DubDub presentation or try to puzzle through the slides.
Yeah. If there's no documentation at all, then it can come in quite handy. If there is some Apple documentation there, then I'm less convinced just yet that having basically another version of Apple's documentation is as worthwhile, except in the case, I guess, of discoverability. Because if you've already subscribed to and a Sipster, and of course you can't subscribe to Apple's documentation and get all the new stuff, mm-hmm. then you'll find out about it earlier from there, even if it's basically the equivalent documentation that you would have gotten from Apple. So yeah, I can see some use to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. More towards the kind of the larger point of this episode is that this is episode... I'm so sorry. I did not notice that you had a new blog posting because this is pretty much exactly what I needed. I guess it was 2 weeks ago, maybe probably a little bit longer than that. I don't know. But I had finally given up. I used to be used Andrew's Wire forever. Then I would sync with Google Reader because I wanted to be able to read it on my iPhone. And then, like right. you, I had pretty much given up reading on my Mac altogether. And with much of the same circumstances that you've recognized in terms of like longer articles not getting their due. And I felt badly about that, but we'll talk about that later. And so it got to the point where I just wouldn't even fire up the Newswire at my Mac anymore. And it was just like, that's Google Reader.
Cue the sad music.
Yeah, because it's such a great app, right? And then when Google killed Reader,
right.
I end up going, I'm like, okay, what do I do? Well, I'll just export my OPML. And I decided to go with this a program called Fever, which is a self-hosted PHP app. Mm-hmm. And I use, and I think it's Andy Bao. He runs XOXO, right? And he has that other like stats tracking package. I forget what the name of it is, but I had successfully used that. So I'm like, oh, he writes good stuff, so I'll use Fever. man, Fever never really clicked for me. I thought it would like update in the background, and apparently never did. I think it's because of misconfiguration on my part. Like, you have to hook up to a cron thing or something. But I spun up on a VM, and this didn't work well for me. And one of the things I learned about this is that if you don't actually read your feeds on a monthly basis, they get obsolete very quickly. Yeah. And I ended up like for I guess a solid year I like very erratically read feeds, and I had piled up a queue of dinosaurs, and they weren't really dinosaurs. I was in bad shape in terms of like I didn't know what was going on in the blog world. So this is why this episode is very timely for me, because it was just about 2 weeks ago that I switched over to Newsblur. Okay. And that was pretty much because Nicholas Riley has been posting his that he's been happy with it. So I've given I paid the money and I jumped over to that. And I will say, it has a bit of weird edges, but I have actually been reading feeds again. But my blog roll, or not really blog roll, but my list of feeds is in really bad shape, and that's why this episode is so great for me, because I've actually been thinking about tweeting, like kind of asking for people to feed me new feeds. So this is exactly what I needed right when I needed. It's almost like a year to the day that Google actually announced it would shut down Reader. So it's
Well, it takes a lot of effort. I mean, I'm going to do another blog post about the new blogs that I'm reading, but even that isn't everything that's in my RSS feeds, because there are feeds that I read that I wouldn't necessarily say, well, everyone should be following this. So it's still going to be curated. So I still think it's a good idea actually for you to get feedback from people. I would think tweeting it would be a good idea, because then you get just good ideas from everybody. But the other side of that is, as you said, your RSS feed have been getting sort of out of date. And I found, even just going through this maybe a second and a third time preparing for this episode, that a lot of the ones that are still around, I'm using an outdated feed for now. For example, maybe I'm missing new entries. It takes a lot of work to keep this stuff updated. And I don't do it every day, and most people don't do it every day. But it's good to put more effort into it sometimes. Well,
the solution is obviously you should run a pay for aggregator.
I could do a newsletter.
Yeah, you could be an editor. You could decide who gets a voice and who doesn't. You'd make a good king.
Yeah, I don't think they would pay me enough for it though.
I like your instant paper idea. I also, man, instant paper has definitely been kind of a read it never type thing for me.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed with Instapaper is that I want to institute policy with myself, where it's like at the end of the day, I have to read everything that day that I've Instapapered, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't actually pulled the trigger on that on myself yet. But I realize that Instapaper is pretty much a dumping ground for me for when something seems interesting and I don't bother to move into my bookmarking service, which for most folks nowadays seem to be Pinboard, but I still use Delicious. I was basically the last rat on the sinking ship, and the sinking ship has resurrected itself. So it's kind of lonely over there now. But
just you with an empty ship.
Yeah, but I got the run of the ship, man. So I've been successfully using Delicious, and they support RSS. So if you want to subscribe to my link blog, and I think Michael Tsai does that. It seems to be up on everything I do, and other people seem to follow it too. And that's been working for a very long time. And so it's for me, Delicious. And if you're using Pinboard, that's totally fine too. But I would highly recommend using that type of, because I tend to do these things where I build up like 30, 40, 50 tabs at a time. And it's like, I got to read all this stuff, right? Like, no, actually, I don't. I just need to bookmark it so I can find it later. And so the hardest thing there is to find a couple tags so I can actually find it later. And Delicious has a surprisingly long-run service. And I have been able to, not only do I back it up nightly, so I don't care if they ever die. I can probably pretty easily move it to Pinboard and see what's going on there, or run it locally. I think OwnCloud has some sort of bookmarking service. I don't know if that's any good. But it's one of these things where I've used it actually extensively for our edge cases episode, where I was like, oh, there's this one thing about floating point that I bookmarked 3 years ago, and I was able to find it just by typing in the URL bar, and because I tagged it correctly in the first place. So I highly recommend bookmarking services. They make the web a much better place.
Okay, and we're running a little long here, so.
Yeah, that's the last thing I have to say.
So okay.
We can wrap it up here.
All righty, we'll see you next time.